It's a community in conversation. Join Kathy Kayla every Friday at 9 a.m. for Community in Conversation. Be brave enough to start a conversation that matters. Right here on 101.9 High FM.
Good morning. I'm Kathy Kayla. Thank you for joining me. Over the past 20 years, we've all seen and experienced family and friends and loved ones immigrating. They've immigrated to London, to Australia, New Zealand, America, Israel, the UK. South Africa has always been a safe haven for Jews. Our fellow South Africans are extraordinary people. I've said it so many times. Few people around the world can even compare to our friendliness and our sense of Ubuntu. The best way to describe Ubuntu is the term I am because you are. And we live it daily. We care about each other. We take responsibility for one another. If you have a business idea, South Africa is a playground. As a geographic destination, South Africa is, as far as I'm concerned, the most magnificent country on the planet. From the Wild Coast and Cape coastlines to the majestic Drakensberg Mountains, from the verdant valley of 1,000 hills in KZN to the absolutely breathtaking drives in Mpumalanga, when God blessed Africa, he really gave South Africa a double dose. We also have an incredible climate here. We have better winters than some countries have summers. It sounds like we have so much going for us, doesn't it? So why are people leaving the country? Joining me is the Jewish Agency representative and director of the Israel Center in South Africa, Liat Amar Aran. Welcome, Liat. How would you translate Aliyah as it refers to immigration to Israel? Why is it called Aliyah? When people go and live in London, it's just called, I'm immigrating to London.
Aliyah, the term Aliyah is going up, is moving forward. And I think the belief in the Jewish value is that when you're making Aliyah, when you're actually moving to Israel, you're moving to a more spiritual place, to your actual home in the whole world as a Jewish people. People living in Israel, we called it Yerida, going down.
Okay, so Aliyah is going up and Yerida is when you leave Israel. Is the community keeping you busy, Liat?
Wow. It's a very, very busy time. I don't think it's just the Aliyah. It's also just traveling and visiting family members in Israel. I became one of the experts managing communication with the embassy, trying to follow up the change in the requirement of Israel and trying to help whoever want to go to Israel for youth program, for yeshivot, from seminars, to get sense of information and the right information.
Liat, since you've been the South African representative of the Israel Center and really focusing on Aliyah specifically, how many people have you helped make Aliyah just since you've been here?
Since I got here, I think 1,200 people made Aliyah, something like that.
How long have you been the Shaliach?
I came here on the end of Jan 2019. So in 2019, we had 420 people that made Aliyah. 2020, we had 330 people that made Aliyah. And 2021, this year, we're assuming we're going to see 500 people making Aliyah.
Did you have another plane that just left this last Sunday, or is it this coming Sunday that it's going?
2 weeks ago, on the 25th of July, we had 87 people on that plane. I think it was one of the biggest Aliyah plane in the last, I think, since 94, 96, something like that. And we're going to have another flight on the 24th of August. We think we're going to have 50 Olim on that flight, something like that.
How many community members have made Aliyah in the past 15 years? And this is really just to kind of get a sense of if it's on the increase or if it's a steady rate of Aliyah.
I think all over the years, and I have records since 52, all over the year people made Aliyah. I think on the 50s, it was around 100 people in a year. In the 60s, we see rise number to more of like 400, 500 people making Aliyah every year. On the 70s, we did see a record of 1,500 people made Aliyah on 78. And I think then the biggest South African community have been established in Israel, mainly in Ra'anana. Those are the 70, 80 people that came. After the end of the 70 years, we saw again between 200 to 500 people making Aliyah every year. And I think since 2000, we saw much lower numbers. We mainly saw 100, 200 people making Aliyah every year. I think in the last few years, we're seeing the number they're raising, and mainly people are deciding to immigrate from South Africa, choosing Israel. So I think before that, most of the people immigrate to America, Canada, UK, Australia. And now we're seeing a bigger percentage of people actually making Aliyah.
Wow. Who is going Aliyah? Is it young people, old people, single
Everyone. In the last plane, we had a doctor from Cape Town. He was over 90s. In the next plane, we have people 90s, 80-something that want to make Aliyah. We do see the young people making Aliyah. A lot of young want to go to Israel to do army or to study or to go even on yeshivot and seminary. We have kids that decided to make Aliyah already, mainly because of COVID, the complicated situation going into Israel, going back here. If you're Israeli, it's a bit more easy. So some people are saying, I thought I'm going to make Aliyah 5 years ahead, but maybe I should already do it now. But we also see families with young kids, with a bit older kids making Aliyah, people religious, secular, really, really everyone. I will invite you, Katie, to come with me to the airport on August.
Okay.
And to see the people, really diverse bunch of people.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Just so I understand, the whole process of making Aliyah wasn't suspended or wasn't halted by coronavirus, or was it halted?
Not at all. It was challenging. I think it was very, very stressful days for us as the Israel Center team and for the Olim. I think almost before any Aliyah flight in the last year and a half, something has been changed. They moved them for hotel quarantine to home quarantine. They request another declaration. They request another check, another form. It was madness. And I told people, if you don't have the resilience to make Aliyah in those days, wait until after COVID, because it's really, really challenging time. But no, Israel haven't stopped the Aliyah, only on the, I think we had few weeks that Israel shut down the sky and didn't let any plane landing. So in those weeks, we couldn't send Olim. Constant, every month we had Aliyah flight.
Liat, what reasons do people give you for making Aliyah?
So we're hearing different reasons. I think the main reason that we hear from, you know, young families with kids is that they want to give a different future for their kids, that they believe Israel can offer more for their kids. I think that's the main answer that we got from families and often from youth. Like, they believe they can have a better life. They can have more options of occupation, of studying, if they will go to Israel. The other reason that we hear beside pure Zionist wish and believe is to be with family members that already made Aliyah, to go and join your kid or your sibling or your parents that made Aliyah before, and you're feeling this is the right time for you to join and to be with them. I think those are the main two reasons that people are telling us. I think the South African Jewish community are very, very Zionist community. Connection to Israel is something that is very obvious here. Most of the people feel belong, feel that Israel is part of their life and consider Israel as their home. The decision to do that, this move is a very big decision to make. And I'm always telling people, don't run to that decision. Really take it into consideration, evaluate all what it means for you, and make your own decision. Even if you saw all your friends making Aliyah, maybe it's not the right decision for you. And you need to really balance it with all what you have here and all what you want to have there, and to make a proper decision that's relevant for your family and or for yourself.
Liat, you've obviously lived in both South Africa and in Israel, and you've maintained more or less the same sort of lifestyle. How does lifestyle compare for the average Israeli?
Currently now, my husband and my three big sons out of four are in Israel, and we sent them at the beginning of July to have a normal summer time in Israel, not being here in lockdown. I tell you the truth. I think for kids, Israel is the best place to be. I think for us, the adult, it's much more easier here in South Africa. But when you grew up in Israel, being adult in Israel is something that you used to. You grew up know how to clean your house and how to manage your life and the busyness day that Israel is offering. Israel is a very, very busy, stress country. And I think life here are much more calmer. Although the security issue or the riot that we had a few weeks ago, life here are much more calmer. People have much more quality of life in terms of what they can get with their money, the size of their houses, the health that they have at home, Everything is very, very comfortable here. In Israel, you need to work harder. In any terms, you need to work harder in your house. You need to work harder in your work because you need probably to work more hours to earn the money that you need to live a proper life. And life in Israel are very, very busy. But this is for us, the adult. I think for kids, I think, and it's a hard thing to say, I think life for kids in South Africa is not a proper life for kids. And I think it's hard to listen to that, but I believe kids in Israel having much, much better life, less stress, more social life, more relaxed, more spontaneous life, less stress about grades in early ages, more focus on what is important in life, social interaction, building your identity, independent, trying new stuff, explore yourself. I think kids here lacking those experience in early ages. They start getting it when they get into high school. And I do believe Israel, it's a better place for kids to grow up in.
That's absolutely fascinating. I'd never considered that. And thinking about it, suppose in Israel, kids just get on the public transport and go. And I'm talking specifically about Jewish kids. Here, they need to be driven by mommy, mommy's Uber.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
Here, like when you are 12 years old or 14 years old, you still get help from your parents to book your social interaction. You can't just decide that you want to hang out with that kid or that girl or that boy on that day. Your parents always involved in your life. And lots of communication done by the parents. You know, one of my kids' math teacher called me from here, from South Africa, telling me about my kid's exam. And I told her, did you communicate that to him? She said, I will, but I wanted to share it with you first. Said, no, share it with him first, and then he will come back to me and share it with me. And I think this is a very, very different set of mind. Who responsible on the math of my kids, me or him? In Israel, it's definitely him. I'm sure there is parents are taking those responsibility, but most of the people leaving that responsibility on the kids. And I think eventually you grow up much more independent and scalable kids when you're giving them much more responsibility from younger age.
So interesting. How do you think the standard of living compares between South Africa and Israel? And, you know, take the average, you know, community family. They may be getting takeaways once or twice a week. Would that still be true in Israel? Would they be able to duplicate their lives here in Israel? Or would it be a very different life and a different existence?
No, it's going to be harder. I think when you look at a grocery cart, you say, trolley, you're going to pay in Israel twice to have the same grocery in your trolley. Okay? And I think it's important to understand when you're sitting in a restaurant here, you're paying half the price than you will pay in Israel. So assuming you're going to earn the same money, like the same occupation, the same average amount of money, you will need to cut your life in half in order to live in Israel in some way. Houses in Israel are much smaller. And, you know, we always say you don't pay for education in Israel. You don't pay for security. You don't pay for your health insurance in Israel. So a lot of the expenses that people are paying here are taking from you once you immigrate to Israel, once you're making Aliyah. But the cost of living, how much coffee costs you in the coffee place, is much, much higher than here. I tell you, like, here we can afford much more than we can afford in Israel. For me, it's a bit different because I am on shlichut, so I'm not earning a lot. Shlichut, it's not for the money. Like, me and my husband earn more in Israel than here. To go with shlichut is understanding that you are not going to make money in those years. But when I'm going to the grocery and I'm making my shop for Shabbat and I'm taking a shot of my stuff and sending to my family and asking them how much I paid for this, and they always duplicate the amount. And I think this is something it's important to understand, that the cost in Israel is very, very high.
Is that true with clothing as well? Or is it food that's much more? Is clothing also much more?
There is no cheap employees in Israel, okay? What you have here, you can have here lots of people that you're paying them 5,000 rand to work in the grocery shop. In Israel, you don't have it. You have minimum amount that you can pay to your employees. And then you don't have those cheap employees that can lower the cost of everything. Everything costs more. Clothing costs more. Food costs more. Transportation costs more. Vacation costs more. Everything costs more. Yeah, I think education costs less and health costs less and security costs less besides going to the army, that it's a big, big price to pay. But you don't really pay for your security, and you have functioning police and functioning army that you trust. And I think this is also something very strong, why people moving to Israel and feeling a bit more safe. I don't think it's a safer country in all terms, but you're feeling more safe because you know that there is no corruption in those areas. And if you call police, someone will stand in your door immediately and will assist you if, God forbidding, you need it. And I think it's a different sense of security.
I hear that. So how do salaries compare? Let's take, for example, the salary of teachers. How do the salaries compare between Israel and South Africa?
I think it's quite the same in terms of rand and shekel. Compare, you know, you always need to calculate years of experience and which degree you have. But I think mainly it's the same salary. I think the question is what you can earn, what you can buy in that salary, how much the other stuff costs you. But mainly it's the same salary in rand and shekel.
Liat, what is the tax rate in Israel?
It depends how much you earn and how many kids do you have and where do you live. Everyone have a different tax rate. You can pay 20%, 30%, 40%, and you can even live in a place that the government will pay you back. But they're calculating degrees, number of kids, the place that you are living in. If you made Aliyah, you are not paying tax for a few years. It's a lot to take into consideration. It's not one proper answer.
Right. So it's not one flat rate, but it starts at 20%.
Yeah, if you live in Sderot, for example, you are not paying tax, almost not paying tax unless you're earning a lot of money. But average salaries, I think paying very, very limited amount of tax.
Okay. Did you say if you live in Sderot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not if you're living in Ra'anana, but if you're living in the periphery of Israel, yeah, they encourage you to live there.
What do your tax shekels cover? Meaning, what does the Israeli government cover in terms of medical and schooling? So if I want to see a doctor, can I just phone any doctor who I want and go to that doctor if I don't have private medical insurance?
Okay, so let me explain how the health insurance works. So the Israel made a law that gives health support to everyone in the country. It means that everyone is eligible to get full cover of health. You need to choose which health foundation you want to be assigned to. And there is four, Klalit, Maccabi, Meuchedet, and Leumit. And then a few times in a year, you can change your health foundation. But once you're related to one, there is a list of doctors and clinics that you are able to go and get services from them. Your clinic is supposed to be available for you on a daily basis. Some of the doctor you need to book online when there is a next available meeting for them. In most of the health foundation, you can enlarge the service that you get and pay a bit more and get more services. Like you're paying 50 shekel in a month, 200 rand in a month. And then you can get a bigger list of doctors that you can approach and schedule a meeting with them. Some of them are private doctors that not related to your health foundation, but you're giving that right because you're paying a bigger amount of money. For example, in pregnancy, there is an amount of coverage that you're getting by the government. And if you want to do another check or another test, then it needs to be covered privately or by this upgrade of your health insurance that you did. In general, the aim is that whoever needs service can go and get it. As always, it's not 100% working. Sometimes you need to wait for an examination few weeks or few months even. And if you're going to pay it privately, you're going to get it in the same day. So it's always a challenge whether you allow private health services or not. Israel is trying to limit as much as they can the private. But we all balancing between those stuff because when my mom was sick with cancer, I didn't really care about paying for private. I just wanted the best for her. So whoever can offer me quick services, fast and immediate, I would pay whatever I will to get it fast. I assuming people that cannot afford those paying will wait a few months to get the treatment that they're looking for. So this is what the health is giving you. All the hospitals, most of the hospital are considered governmental hospital. It means that when I need to go to emergency room, I can just pick one of the hospital in the country and go there immediately. And if it was relevant to go to emergency room, my health foundation will cover it. So you can really get services wherever you are in the country. You don't really need to go back to your home city and then get your services there. If we're talking about education, most of the educational system in Israel is governmental. It means that in every city, you can find a great governmental school that you can send your kids to. Still, the Haredic educational system, part of it is not governmental. It's private. You can find some private school around the country. Some of them are more related to new educational philosophy that they're trying to establish, the anthroposophy or Waldorf or some democratic way. But even those schools that they starting in the private, always trying to be back in the governmental system because it's allowed them to get much more help from the government to assist them to support the school and even to sponsor all the school fee. If you're going to a governmental school, you don't really pay on a monthly fee to the school. You're paying once in a year payment to cover insurance and to cover tools and extra activity that the school is offering. And it's not a big amount of money. It could be 1,000 shekel, 2,000 shekel for a year. And there is limited amount that the school can ask for. Some of the school, if they're having private section or specific subject that they're offering, and maybe dormitory or something like that, then they have the ability to request a bigger amount of money.
Okay, thank you. That was an excellent answer. Liad, are there domestic workers in Israel?
Domestic workers? That's a big question. There are, not like here. You need to be very, very, very rich to afford yourself full week support like people having here. I can tell you that the amount that I pay here for my domestic workers that are doing amazing work in my home 5 days a week, I'm paying in Israel for 4 hours once in a week cleaning of my house. That's the same amount of money. It's not easy to find a good domestic work to assist you in your house, and it's expensive. So I can tell you that many of my friends not having it every week, they're having it once in 2 weeks, just for a few hours. And when you're living in Israel, unless you are very, very rich, you usually need to learn how to clean your house and how to do your laundry.
If someone is wanting to make Aliyah and the domestic worker has been part of their family, as you by now know, and they want to go together, they want to bring the domestic worker and her family with, would that be a problem?
Big problem. This is not something that we can do, that we can allow.
Yeah.
The domestic worker really can't come. The only thing that they need to work is to get your work permit, but it's not something that Israel is giving to South African. It needs to be countries' agreement to move workers from one country to another, and South Africa and Israel doesn't have that agreement. So Israel is mainly having foreign workers from India, from Ukraine, and from other countries around the globe. So unfortunately, people are not able to bring the domestic worker. In a regular day, they can bring her with them for 3 months and then trying to apply for a work permit. I'm quite sure they won't get it. But it's a very interesting question. People asking me that question again and again. People wishing to take the domestic worker with them. It's part of their family. But unfortunately, we can't afford that. Eventually, the amount of permit that people getting, it's not something that Israel just delivering to whoever asked for it. It's all checked to details, and people need to fall under the law of return carefully in order to get that permit to live in Israel. So I believe this is something that Israel won't change in the next future.
Does Israel ever reject an application for Aliyah?
Yes. Yes, we do reject people. It's not a lot. It could be if you're not falling under the law of return. It could be if you're a criminal and Israel getting all the proof that you are going to damage the country or hurt people. And sometimes we do reject people that we believe that it's not good for them to make Aliyah. And it's in a very, very extreme position when we meet somebody that has no support system in Israel and no funds to assist himself and no ability to work or to start life in another country. We will recommend that person to stay in the community that he came from and not do that transition to another country with different language and start with no ability to really start life there. It's very rare. Most of the people, it's a long process to make Aliyah, and it's required a lot from you. So most of the people take everything into consideration, and we're checking that they're knowing what they're doing. But yes, in my period here, I think I saw 3 rejections that people got.
Okay, well, since 2019, I don't know whether that's good or bad.
But I think it's good. And I think, you know, on the process, I'm very, very honest. People can tell you, whoever talked to me, I'm putting everything on the table. I'm not selling Israel to anyone. I'm not here as a marketing person. No one is paying me for any people that made Aliyah. And I want to go to my bed and sleep quietly at night knowing that whoever made Aliyah, it was his decision, knowing as much information as he can. So I will tell people, you will have no domestic work. It's going to cost you a lot. Israel, it's intense country. You're going to be very busy. You need to maybe work 2 positions in order to cover your life. It's not easy to live there. People are rude. The traffic are terrible. There is a lot of traffic jam. It's not like I will tell all the honest stuff. In the same time, I will tell the positive stuff. I think it's one of the most countries that you feel belong and you can influence and everyone is matter. And I think for your kids or for your grandchild, it's the best place to be. Very, very, I think really the best place for kids to grow up in. But if I will see someone sitting next to me, and I had a lady that was getting a lot of support from Zachev, have no support system in Israel, not really working, have no saving. I convinced her now to make Aliyah. She wasn't listening to me. And I was, when Israel requests our Amlatza, any candidate we need to recommend whether it's the right thing for him or not. And I said, no, it's definitely not the right thing for her. And then Israel denied her Aliyah, rejected her Aliyah. Yeah.
When you say that it takes time, how long does the process of Aliyah take?
Okay, so the process can change between, we believe, 6 months to 1 year. Depend which document do you have or which document you need to collect. If you're a very organized person and you have all your document with you, then it could be a fast process. But people sometimes expect us to do miracles. We sometimes do, but sometimes we can't without proper document. So, for example, I do know about few stories in the last year that we managed to make Aliyah in a few weeks with people because they were very organized. They had all the document, or it was the young person that it was easy to gather all the information. But sometimes people waiting to get another birth certificate or passport, and we can't do anything without it. We really need all the document and we can't give up any of them.
And obviously one of those documents very important is proof of Jewishness.
Proof of Jewishness, but this is one of the easiest ones to get. The Bedin giving you very easily, or a main rabbi in the community that we know of can give you. This is something easy if you are Jewish, of course. If you converted, you need that time in the community in order to make Aliyah. You can't make Aliyah just after conversion. You need to be engaged in the community for at least 1 year before you can make Aliyah. One of the documents that Israel added in the last year is police clearance. So this seems something that made it a bit harder. If your police clearance is not clean, it's a question about your Aliyah. To get police clearance, sometimes it's very easy. People manage to get it in a few weeks. Sometimes it's taking a longer time to get it, like more than 2 months. So this is something that made a bit obstacle on the process.
I wonder how it all works. If, for example, you take a couple who they've built a life in South Africa, they are now retired, they want to spend their golden years in Israel. They've only ever paid tax in South Africa. How does Israel manage to absorb and to some degree fund the lives of all these new Olim who have never paid tax in Israel, but who are at some time in the near future going to require, you know, medical assistance and medical health care and stuff like that?
First of all, Kathy, what you said is amazing. You know, like you can make Aliyah in the age of 91, knowing that probably you will need a lot of health support in the next few years. And Israel just allowing you to come and to get it as a Jew. And I think it's amazing. It's really not obvious. And I think this is what we're calling home. When even if you haven't been at home for years, when you're coming back, you're feeling that you are welcome and you hugged and you're getting a hot meal to assist you. One of the things it's important to say that you can't come and just lay back on Israel. The money that the government will give you as an elderly people will not be sufficient to cover all your expenses. Okay, so it's not that you can just made Aliyah when you are 65 and hope that Israel will now solve all your financial problem. Okay, it's important to understand. And I'm always saying you carry your problem with you. If you're moving to Israel, all your problems that you had in South Africa will continue and follow you back into Israel. If it's your mental problem or your financial problem or your health problem, nothing will change. Only the scenario, only the spiritual environment that you're going to live in. Israel do give monthly support to elderly people, but it's not enough. It could be between 1,700 shekel to 3,000 shekel, depending which year you exactly made Aliyah. How old was you? Did you work before or not? Do you have other requirements that they need to check? Are you single? Are you married? Do you have? Did you bought a house in Israel or not? So they calculate everything together and then they're giving you something. But it's amazing. I think what you said, it's amazing that you can actually go and rely on what Israel is offering to every citizen there.
Anyone who's interested in finding out more, getting more information, or passing it on, how do they get in touch with the Israel Center?
Okay, so first of all, we are available. We have our website. And on our website, there is a new movie that we produce explaining all the process, animation movie that we did just to share with people all the information. You can call us to the Israel Center and we can send you all the information and all the processes to open your Aliyah file, to get some information. Almost every week, 2 weeks, we have a webinar giving people the basic information about Aliyah. We had one last week, Q&A on Aliyah. And we gave people the information. We answer all their questions. Next week, we're going to have webinars about employment for people speaking English in Israel. On the 26th of August, we're going to have webinars about the health foundation, health support, health system in Israel. So we're trying like every 2 weeks giving information and knowledge to people. My team, Tanya, Ziva, Sharon, Debbie, they're all here to assist and to answer people's questions and to guide them in the process. But the main recommendation that I'm telling people, Kathy, is do your own research. Talk to people, join WhatsApp group, join Facebook group. Contact your friends from high school that made Aliyah 20 years ago and ask him all the questions. Contact your neighbors that made Aliyah a year ago and collect information. There is so much information. And each Aliyah process is a very, very individual process. What's important for you and not important for her, and what you care about is definitely what they care about. And you need to check what you need in order to succeed in your Aliyah. What is important for you? Community life, education, your finance situation, the size of your house. What is more important for you? And I think only when people answer their own question, you know, not running into Anana like everyone else, but maybe considering going to live somewhere else when you can afford a bigger house or more community diverse life than South African or Anglo people. You know, we are all different people and it's a very, very individual process. And I think the main thing to understand about Aliyah, it's not an easy one. It's not an easy process. It could be very traumatic if you are not doing it right. And it could be very traumatic if you are not prepared for that. So I will tell everyone, do your research. No matter how many support we can offer you, it's your aliyah. You're going to live those lives, not anyone else. So the people that coming in and, you know, why you are not helping me more? Why you are not giving me more information? You know, always go back to yourself and just gain that information, collect that information, take a notebook and start writing whatever you can for yourself. This is my main recommendation. Okay. So let's go on to the Israel Center website. Israel Center in South Africa, we are there with all the phone numbers and information and all the process of making Aliyah. We're now working on a new website, but still our website is on and you can go onto it and get all your information that you need.
Liat Amararan, thank you very, very much for the time. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Katie.
Thank you. Shabbat
and
shalom.
Good luck to whoever considering and whoever want to make Aliyah. Really, really good luck.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Liat.
You're welcome.
This is Community in Conversation with Kathy Kayla, starting conversations that matter.
What today was really about was about immigration in general. It was about giving you perspective, the honest information. And I hope that you have a better idea of the challenges. I chose to focus on Israel because it is by far the softest landing. And even that doesn't sound easy. You heard Liat say, it is not easy. Nobody's going to live your life for you. There's also a spiritual element to Aliyah, which cannot be ignored. Israel is the spiritual home of every Jew. Just be sure whether you are running from or running to. South Africa will be okay. We will all be okay. That said, I leave you with some food for thought. As our community diminishes in size, what measures are in place to accommodate this? Have you thought about it? The huge and costly organizations and communal structures are going to need to adapt if we are to continue enjoying all that we have here. But that's another show. On that note, I bid you and yours a Shabbat Shalom. This is Kathy Kayla for Community in Conversation.
It's a Community in Conversation. Join Kathy Kayla every Friday at 9 a.m. for Community in Conversation. Be brave enough to start a conversation that matters. Right here on 101.9 High FM.